crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nuchtegaard. We're coming to you today, as per usual, from Jerusalem, Israel, where the metal detectors are down, the barriers have been removed, the security cameras around the Temple Mount, they're gone as well. It appears that we have returned to a pre-July 14 situation around the Temple Mount, which, according to about 77% of Jewish Israelis, is a complete capitulation to the Palestinians with the withdrawal of all of those security measures. And now it seems, as we look at this crisis in hindsight, it's time to talk about what really happened and who is responsible for it. Now, I'm not talking about the commotion that followed. I'm talking about the original event. The original event, which saw three Palestinian terrorists, or really Israeli Arabs from the north of Israel, come onto the Temple Mount carrying weaponry, and a short while later use that weaponry from the Temple Mount against Israeli soldiers. That act is what set off the firestorm, which resulted in riots, deaths of many people that we've seen over the past 2 weeks. Now, clearly, whoever wanted this to happen, whichever group, whichever nation wanted this to happen, understood the volatility of the Temple Mount and the way that it can be used to ignite the Arab street against Israel, to the point that it wouldn't really need a direct overseer. What I mean by that is, as soon as you start this ball rolling where Muslims and the Arabs here are taking this attack on the Temple Mount, or as what they see that as an attack on the Temple Mount, such as the setting up of metal detectors, they will take that ball and run with it to the point that you don't need somebody directing things on the ground. The commotion will continue until Israel, at this point, at least at this time, step down. It doesn't need any direct oversight. Now, because of that, it's leading many people to say that this was just a rare grassroots uprising of the Palestinian people that didn't have any real oversight, be it from Fatah, be it from Hamas, or anybody else. And I think that is a somewhat naive assessment. Clearly, there was a groundswell of support once the original act took place, but there was likely an instigator. There was somebody that said, go do that. How else do you get three people to have weapons all the way inside the Temple Mount to use it as a staging ground for a terrorist attack when it hasn't happened before? This was likely planned by somebody, And on today's program, we're going to talk about that, who is behind this this attack. This attack on the Temple Mount status quo, not by the Israelis, but by these Palestinians that were using it as a staging ground for terrorist attacks. Somebody told them to do that. Who was it? Who was it? Now, there was an article today on the Times of Israel entitled Palestinians See Temple Mount Showdown as Rare Grassroots Victory. And I want to read a portion of this. It says this: while Palestinians' joy at the removal of security measures was somewhat tarnished by clashes inside the compound, which houses the Al-Aqsa Mosque, later Thursday, that is last week, Palestinians that night chanted and hugged each other as car horns sounded incessantly. A huge Palestinian flag was carried by young men onto one of the old city walls, an extremely rare act in a city that Israel considers its undivided capital. And of course, I remember that act on Thursday night last week, seeing the Palestinian flag above the Al-Aqsa Mosque before it was taken down by Israeli security officials. Obviously, that is the goal here. The end goal is to wrest the Temple Mount completely away from Israeli control. Nevertheless, this article continues. It says, we feel joyous. I live quite far away, but I walked here for Al-Aqsa. That was a young woman from the crowd to the Times of Israel. And she said, the Israelis think this is it. God willing, this is just the beginning. End quote. So that's what they're thinking, that this isn't necessarily over right now. This is just the beginning. And the end of it will be, according to them, the complete takeover of the Temple Mount by the Palestinians. And I've got an article up just this past week about that. If you would like to go back and read that, I can leave the link for you to go back and read about how this is just the beginning of what the Arabs want, a complete takeover of the Temple Mount. Now, this apparent infringement to Arab rights on the Temple Mount, which is a pernicious lie, as we've already discussed, this really did mobilize the Arab street. It is a unifying cause like none other, that Israel is trying to take over the Temple Mount, that Israel is desecrating the Al-Aqsa Mosque. This lie is used to unify the Arab street, and much more than just those here in Israel. This article continues, but while the Palestinian protest movement was called to the streets by the Waqf, Palestinians have celebrated the Israeli move as a rare grassroots victory. This is now quoting Diana Bouti. She's a former Palestinian official turned analyst. She said this: "This cuts through or across all lines, religious, not so religious, Muslim, Christian, rich or poor. It doesn't matter." And then she says the Palestinian political leadership of all factions, including the Palestinian Authority, that was mostly irrelevant through this, she said. And then she added, Al-Aqsa is a rare unifying symbol for all Palestinians, and there's a risk they could fall back into political infighting now that the immediate threat has been defeated. So what they're saying there is that when the fight isn't over Al-Aqsa, or when Israel isn't the common enemy, which is only deemed the common enemy of Hamas and Fatah and the different groups when they can come together is only because of when Israel is trying to take over Al-Aqsa, apparently. Without that, there's no Palestinian cooperation. And yet we see that tapping into the narrative that Israel is endangering the Temple Mount, well, that seems to bridge all the gaps between these organizations. Now, it's sad that it takes such a lie to bring the Palestinians together, but it's the truth nevertheless, and it's a truth that every Arab organization is aware of, be it Hamas, be it Fatah, be it nations, be it Saudi Arabia, be it Jordan. They understand the unifying effect that Al-Aqsa creates amongst the Muslim world. Now, Palestinian Authority Mahmoud Abbas, he understands this completely as well. That's why once he saw that the Palestinian street was up in arms about it, he came on strong and he said, oh, we're going to freeze our security cooperation with Israel. That's something he hadn't done for 10 years. Why did he do that? Because this was already out of control and he had to show himself as the champion of Al-Aqsa. Because they were looking for some leadership from someone. And then now, of course, as the Temple Mount situation starts to simmer down, he announced just yesterday that he's willing to work with Israel once again, but gradually. Naturally, he's more afraid, of course, he says this, because he's more afraid of Hamas undermining his leadership in the West Bank. Yet before, when the people were upset about Israel and what they were doing on Al-Aqsa, he had to show himself the champion of Al-Aqsa. Because again, the power that Al-Aqsa has over the hearts and minds of Palestinians is unparalleled. Nevertheless, there isn't going to be a return to the status quo anymore. Israel must analyze these events that took place on the Temple Mount and really understand just how much the Temple Mount can be used as a match that threatens not only to mobilize the Palestinians, but also the Muslim world. That's the reality. Of course, I do think that many in the Israel's leadership understands that, and that perhaps is why they backed down, because they saw where this might lead, and they thought, well, let's just take a breather and come up with a better way to ensure security around the Temple Mount, because if we don't, this is going to capture the hearts of the Muslim world against us. Now, we've been watching this at Watch Jerusalem very closely, because we believe that actions on the Temple Mount will indeed unite the Muslim world against Israel to a degree that armies are even willing to fight against Israel. They might not actually do that fully, but they're willing to do it. And in light of this, I want to discuss a piece that Tablet magazine published last Thursday. It's the only paper that's claiming this, but it has some very important insight that bears watching. It's entitled, "Was Iran Behind the Recent Violence on the Temple Mount?" Was Iran behind the recent violence on the Temple Mount? Lyle Leibovitz, quip, says this, the latest campaign against Israel has all the hallmarks of an Islamic Republic operation. Now, this is important because we're going back to the very initial event that sparked these riots. Whoever did that was fully aware of the combustible nature of the Temple Mount and, in fact, used the sacred place and spilt blood on the sacred place, according to the Muslims, on purpose. On purpose to get a reaction. And Lyle Leibovitz here is asking the question, was Iran behind that recent violence on the Temple Mount? Now, this is important because of something our editor-in-chief, Gerald Flory, wrote back in 2006. He spoke about half of Jerusalem falling into Arab hands and that coming about through or because of an impasse on the Temple Mount. On the Temple Mount. This is what he said. The Palestinians will take half of Jerusalem. They say even now that a Palestinian state must include East Jerusalem, which already is comprised mostly of Palestinians, and the Temple Mount. They want Jerusalem with the Temple Mount as their capital. The Palestinians could, and I believe will, conquer the Temple Mount and refuse access to anybody else. That's where it's leading. That's where it's leading. It might not be right now, but that is the end result here. The Palestinians could, and I believe will, conquer the Temple Mount and refuse access to anybody else. That's what they want. And then later on, he said, the Palestinians, backed by Iran, will almost certainly do this violent deed. So you can see here, this is in the context of the Temple Mount. It's in the context of the Palestinians taking the Temple Mount from Israel. And he said that it's going to be likely the Palestinians backed by Iran. Now, that's why when I see a headline that asks, as this one did this past week, if Iran was behind this event on the Temple Mount, I sit up and I take notice, and so should you. Again, clearly, Iran understands the unifying effect that a fight for Jerusalem has. Especially one that says to the Muslim world that Israel is desecrating their holy site. Now, I want to read part of this article for you and just set it up how Leibovitz sets it up, because he doesn't have much proof of it, but he of Iran's compliance or directing this attack. But he goes through all the likely candidates, and it doesn't add up. Not one of them perpetrated this attack. It was done by somebody else, or at least by the beckoning of somebody else. And again, it's very important because this is what we've been watching for at Watch Jerusalem. For Iran to get involved in the Palestinian impasse with Israel over the Temple Mount. And that's what this author is saying. And again, Gerald Flory said this back 10, 15, 20 years ago. That this was going to happen. Now, the start of this article says this. So what? And I'll leave a link for you to get to this article. Of course, I think it's worth reading. He says this. So what just happened on the Temple Mount? The timeline's a blur of shrieks and stabs and stone throws. So let's try and put things in order. Three Palestinian terrorists murder two Israeli police officers. Israel responds by placing metal detectors at the entrance of the compound. The Palestinians portray the simple security measure as a Jewish attempt to wrestle the holy spot away from Islam. Violence ensues, claiming the lives of three Israelis slaughtered in their kitchen as they were celebrating the birth of a baby. A Jordanian teenager attempts to stab an Israeli security officer in a diplomatic residence in Amman and is shot and killed. The Jordanian government, violating international accords, holds the officer hostage, demanding he be interrogated by the local police. The Palestinians demand the metal detectors be removed. Other Arab nations agree. Benjamin Netanyahu caves in, taking the metal detectors down and promising they'll be replaced by other high-tech security systems. Now, that's when this article was written. Again, those cameras were taken down brief shortly thereafter as well. Then he writes this. This is Leibovitz again from Tablet Magazine. He writes, if you've ever played chess competitively or participated in combat or engaged in any other activity in which victory hinged on strategic calculus, you'll have no problem seeing this scenario for what it truly was, a carefully planned, neatly executed military operation. even in a neighborhood as chaotic as the Middle East, coincidence alone cannot explain a series of occurrences that lead a powerful regional player, Israel, to fold and hand its mortal enemies a stinging victory. So what happened to make Israel retreat? The answer to this question depends on who you believe set the recent chain of events in motion. Who did it? Who did it? Who set this chain of events in motion? Then he discusses in this article why it was unlikely the Palestinian Authority. He says, if you've been a follower of the PA for a while, you know that it's a street brawler, not a career boxer. It is rarely capable of thinking past the latest conflagration. And when it accidentally starts something it knows it can't finish, it seeks a swift resolution, keenly aware that without Israel's security cooperation, it would soon implode into civil war. Of course, that's the case, and that's why we see even now Fatah and the PA coming back on with Israel with their security cooperation, because they need it, because now that they don't have this joint fight against Israel, Hamas could grow in strength in the West Bank, and it can't have that because it would lose its control. Then Leibovitz here discusses that Hamas could have been the ones that mobilized the killers. He writes, Hamas, the next culprit in line, is a more likely candidate. The organization, after all, has made a career of provoking Israel into retaliating and then whipping up the rest of the world into a frenzy of condemnations aimed at the Jewish state. Then again, the organization is rarely shy about claiming responsibility for its attacks. And even though it praised the Temple Mount shooters and argued that the shooting was the, quote, legitimate right for our people and the best evidence of their unity in resisting the brutal occupation, end quote, it's likely they're not behind the attack. They didn't claim it. Hamas always claims it if they're behind their attack. They didn't claim it. And if it were as well, he goes on to write, Israel would know and an armed conflict would have likely ensued. But that didn't happen. There were no strikes against Hamas by Israel. So it probably wasn't Hamas. Then he settles on Iran. And this is what he writes. After you discount a host of other regional bystanders like Jordan, where another weak regime depends on Israeli security cooperation for its very survival, you're left with one conclusion, backed by no discernible evidence, but eminently logical and hard to refute: the architect of the recent wave of violence is Iran. Now that is chilling just because of what we've been waiting for and watching for Iran to get involved in the impasse over the Temple Mount. Now we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll discuss how Iran could have been behind this original attack on the Temple Mount. You don't want to go away. Stay with us.
KPCG 101.3, Trumpet Radio, is your source of understanding. Trumpet Radio broadcasts from the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College in Edmond, Oklahoma, and online at kpcg.fm. Thank you for listening. They call it the City of Peace. But it is filled with violence. Yesterday, bloody crusades and sieges. Today, terrorism, rocket attacks, and stabbings. Intense international pressure. But no diplomatic solutions. This is Jerusalem. No city has suffered like it. Will there ever be peace? God says yes. There will be peace in Jerusalem, and not just for the Jews. It will be a peace that spreads to all people. How will God bring peace to Jerusalem? Request your free copy of Jerusalem in Prophecy to find out. The answer comes straight from your Bible. Peace is coming soon. Act today. Please visit thetrumpet.com.
Yeah.
This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. We're talking about the latest flare-up at the Temple Mount and how Iran might be behind it. Now, it might seem a little bit out of left field to blame Iran for a terrorist attack that took place on the Temple Mount here in Israel. And yet, if you look at the goals of Iran, what they've stated and how they want to use Jerusalem as a rallying cry for the Muslim world to rally behind Iran in its fight against Israel, it kind of makes sense that they would try and stir up trouble in this way. If you're looking at the other Middle Eastern nations, they don't really want a flare-up with Israel right now, a lot of them. A lot of them don't want even a Palestinian intifada right now. There was a piece published in Haaretz just today entitled Arab States Fear That a Palestinian Uprising Would Spark Another Arab Spring. And it says this. It says, the innovation in the current affair is that Israel wasn't the only one fearing a Palestinian intifada. Many Arab leaders shared the alarm because, as proven during the Arab Spring earlier this decade, uprisings are a dangerous, contagious disease, and a Palestinian intifada is no longer merely a local reflection of a national struggle against the Israeli occupation. It could mobilize such massive solidarity that would put the Arab regimes in a violent confrontation with their people. So they are scared that it's going to spread to their own nations and put these Arab monarchies, be it Saudi Arabia and the others in the Persian Gulf, Saudi Peninsula, or even going over into Egypt as well. It then writes this, the Temple Mount's potential for mobilizing the masses and the threat it poses are far greater, and not only because it concerns all Islamic states. This potential prevents the Muslim regimes from squashing any demonstrations it generates because of the sacred halo resting over it, compelling them to appear as though they support the public demands against those who breach the site's holiness. So we have the people in these Arab states that are rising up and expressing solidarity with the Palestinians against Israel, believing this lie. You have the Arab rulers understanding that it's a lie, and yet they can't come on the side of down on the side of Israel for fear of their own people. So they go along with it. And so they claim that they all, when it seems to be quieting down, that they all had a part to play in resolving it, such as what Jordan said and even Saudi Arabia said. It's interesting, though, if you look at what happened in Egypt over the past 2 weeks, you wouldn't see that many stories about what was going on in Jerusalem. You wouldn't see much of what was going on the state-run media because it feared that if it showed too much of that, it could be used to mobilize the Muslim Brotherhood and that the people would take to the streets saying, why aren't we doing more against Israel for what they're doing? But the government of Sisi knew that, and he chose not to show too much about it. But Iran, they would love to see a flare-up over the Temple Mount. That is what they intend to do. Now, just looking at this latest terrorist attack, the key to linking it to Iran is locating where these terrorists came from and who they listened to, who motivated them. Now, these attackers were from a town in northern Israel, Umm al-Farm, and I'm probably butchering that pronunciation. Nevertheless, this town is known as a hotbed for the northern branch of the Islamic movement. The northern branch of the Islamic movement that has been outlawed in the last couple of years by Israel as a terrorist organization. It didn't start out as a terrorist organization, even though it was associated with the Muslim Brotherhood. But the state of Israel has decided to, in the past couple of years, outlaw the northern branch. The southern branch still exists. But this northern branch of the Islamic movement is led by Sheikh Ra'ad Salah. And this is a group that more than any other has propagated the lie that the Al-Aqsa Mosque was in danger or is in danger of being destroyed by Israel. And they've attempted to fan hatred for Israel among all Muslims because of this. And that's why, one of the main reasons why this branch is now outlawed. But though, even though it is outlawed, it continues with its nefarious activities, of course. Now, this the leader of this group, Salah, he was serving a prison sentence a couple of years ago for what? Well, he was inflaming or inciting violence against Israelis because of what he saw as Israeli desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. This was, again, this is from the leader of the Islamic movement the northern branch of the Islamic movement, who was the mayor three times from this town that these killers came from. The killers from July 14th came from this heavily populated Arab-Israeli town in northern Israel where the northern branch has a hold. And the leader of the northern branch was in jail for what? For saying things like this. He said this in 2007 from the Al-Aqsa Mosque. He says the streets of Jerusalem, well, he expressed hope that the streets of Jerusalem would be purified with the blood of the innocent who shed it in order to separate from their souls the soldiers of the Israeli occupation, also in the blessed Al-Aqsa Mosque. Then he said, our finest moment will be when we meet Allah as the martyrs in Al-Aqsa. So he advocated back in 2007, not just for fighting against Israelis, but he said that the streets of Jerusalem, and particularly the area of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, is going to be purified by the blood of their martyrs. Clearly, back then, he was calling for terrorist attacks or attacks on Israelis against Israelis from the Al-Aqsa Mosque. I think it's interesting that these Arabs, when they came from Al-Aqsa Mosque to perpetrate this attack, and we've seen footage of this, the Israeli government released footage, a scene by scene, of how they entered the mosque, how they came on buses, entered the mosque, left the mosque with a bag of weapons, changed clothes, and then went and attacked the Israelis. And yet, what did they do once they fired against the Israeli soldiers? Well, they retreated back into the compound. You might just say that that was the easiest way that they could escape, or where they could run to from the Israeli police force. Or you could say that they wanted their blood to be spilt on the Temple Mount compound. Just as this leader, Sheikh Raad Salah, said in 2007, which resulted in 9 months in prison because of that incitement. And yet that's what we saw. That's what we saw take place. These men, obviously having listened to him, again, he's the main leader in their town in northern Israel, they went and put into practice what he said. Now, what's the Iranian connection here to the northern branch of the Islamic movement? Well, if you can go back to 2003 to 2005, this leader was also in prison. And why was he in prison? Well, he was on charges of funding Hamas, who at that time was a proxy of Iran. And then he was also in prison because he was in contact with an Iranian intelligence agent. He was in cahoots with the Iranians back in 2003, 2002. And he's preaching a message in 2007 that you could have heard direct from the Iranian mullahs. Now, in recent years, since he's been released from prison, he has been expanding his own and his movement's activities, of course. They've gone from just solely focusing on Jerusalem to intensive involvement with the different Palestinian sides. And he's indicated his support for Hamas at given times as well. This man, and this is what he wrote in 2011 I believe this was one of Hamas's websites. This is while he was mayor of this town that the three terrorists came from back in 2011. He said, the Muslim movement and its leadership played a prominent role in the issue of the occupied Al-Quds, Jerusalem, and Al-Aqsa Mosque. This role began to expand from the local level to the general Palestinian level, and from there to the worldwide level, mainly regarding the issue of the occupied Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque. So he's saying that it started out on the local level, but what he has been saying about Al-Quds, Jerusalem, and the Al-Aqsa Mosque is now going out to the worldwide level. And then he says this involvement has enabled the movement to forge international connections on all the matters that it concentrates on. They've got international connections right now. That's what he boasted. Again, this leader of the northern branch. And he was in prison because he was funding Hamas, because he had meetings with an Iranian intelligence agent, because he incited men to go and commit atrocities on the Temple Mount. Now he's forming international connections, he says. With who? Now, again, we don't have a direct order from Iran coming down, but we have this leader who's had proven ties with Iran in the past coming out and speaking like he is the Ayatollah, talking about how they should rise up and fight against Israel for what Israel is doing on the Temple Mount. Well, this is what he said the day of the attack. Later on, just on July 14th, he said the Israeli occupation is responsible for all the blood that is spilled at the Al-Aqsa Mosque without exception. It's responsible for the blood of our martyrs from Amr al-Fahim, which was shed this morning, Muhammad, Muhammad, and Muhammad. Three Muhammads that took up arms, a couple of 19-year-olds and a 29-year-old, I believe, that put into practice what this sheikh has been saying for decades, what the Iranians have been saying for decades. It's time to take the Temple Mount back from the Israelis and quit and stop them from desecrating it, apparently. Now, one of the assailants' Facebook page from the day that this attack took place, it showed him saying, or he wrote saying, quote, "Tomorrow's smile will be more beautiful, God willing." That was after he knew he probably would be killed. If you go back to July last year, you see a picture of him with the Northern Branch Islamic Movement leader, Raad Salah, as we're talking about, right next to the Haram al-Sharif, right next to the Temple Mount. The connection is undeniably clear that these men were mobilized by the Northern Branch. At least they were proteges of this man, listening to him for years talk about Al-Aqsa and what Israel is doing to it, and them willing to fight for it. Now, this past Thursday night, there was a huge, huge celebration for the funeral. As many as 10,000 for the funeral of these men, as many as 10,000 people came out. And one of the residents could be seen shouting, al-Fahim will not let them harm Al-Aqsa. This is a day of celebration for the city. We will give our lives for Al-Aqsa. Every Muslim shall give his life for Al-Aqsa. That's coming from the town in northern Israel where everyone carries around a blue ID card that is able to get, they're Israeli citizens, able to get into Israel, able to get into Jerusalem easy. And they're the ones saying that every Muslim should give his life for Al-Aqsa. Now, that's just the way Iran thinks. And yet that's the rhetoric coming from people in Israel, coming from the sheikh of the Northern Front here, Northern Movement. Now, if that sounds vaguely familiar, well, this is what Ayatollah Khamenei said this past Quds Day in Iran. Again, they were chanting this Thursday night in this town in northern Israel, every Muslim should give his life for Al-Aqsa, and talked about how it is a unifying factor. Well, this is what the Ayatollah said. Despite their differences, the differences that exist among some Islamic countries, some of these differences are natural, some originate from the enemy's plot, and the rest are because of negligence. The issue of the Palestine can and should be the pivot of unity for all Islamic countries. One of the achievements of this valuable conference is announcing the first priority of the world of Islam and freedom fighters all over the world, which is the issue of Palestine and the creation of an atmosphere of harmony and unanimity with the purpose of achieving the lofty goal of supporting the people of Palestine in their truthful and justice-oriented fight. The significance of offering political support for the people of Palestine should never be neglected. This is an issue. This issue has special priority in today's world. Even if Muslims and freedom-seeking nations have different viewpoints and opinions, they can gather together with one goal, which is Palestine and the necessity to liberate it. That's what Iran's saying. You won't hear that from other Muslim leaders throughout the world, especially the Middle East. You won't see them saying, this is something we can rally behind, the need to liberate Palestine. Then he got even more specific. He said this, the people of Palestine, again, this is Ayatollah Khamenei, this past year at the Quds Day celebrations in Tehran, he said the people of Palestine are proud that Allah the Exalted has given them a great favor by helping them to shoulder the great responsibility of defending this holy land and Al-Aqsa. That's what he's talking about. Al-Aqsa, defending Al-Aqsa from the Israelis. And that's the same thing that this preacher from the Northern Branch of the Islamic Movement has been talking about for decades. And that's the same thing that these men that committed this terrorist attack from Al-Aqsa on purpose wanted to help initiate this type of intifada over Al-Aqsa again. We've already seen one or two of those. Now they want a third one. This is what, again, Ayatollah Khamenei said this earlier this year, and I'm trying to just show you the connection here, the ideological connection that exists between these two groups, one being Iran and the other being the northern front or the northern branch of the Islamic movement. He says the people of Palestine have no option other than keeping the flames of fighting alight by relying on Allah the Exalted and by relying on their innate capabilities as they have genuinely done so until today. The intifada that has begun for the third time in the occupied lands is subject to more suppression than the previous two, but it's still moving forward in a bright and hopeful manner. And by Allah's permission, we will see that this intifada will begin a very important chapter in the history of fighting and that it will inflict another defeat on that usurping regime. Then it says, until today, several intifadas and have a constant and continuous resistance have managed to achieve very important phased goals. The Palestinian intifada continues to gallop forward in a thunderous manner so that it can achieve its other goals until the complete liberation of Palestine. So he started that off saying the Palestinians have the great responsibility of defending Al-Aqsa, and he finishes it off saying that this isn't going to end until the complete liberation of Palestine takes place. Takes place. And then he concluded it this way, his speech. I ask God the benevolent to help all you succeed in serving the issue of Palestine as the most important issue in the world of Islam and as the pivot of unity for all Muslims and all liberated individuals in the world. Now, this is Iran's goal. Mr. Gerald Flory wrote in 1995 that the most precious jewel in Iran's plan is to conquer Jerusalem. This would galvanize the Islamic world behind Iran. That's what he wrote. And that's what we see coming out of the mouth of this leader of this Islamic group that's still roaming free right now in Israel, that the whole Islamic world can rally behind this cause of taking Al-Aqsa back. Taking Al-Aqsa back. Now, whether or not Iran paid for or directed this attack down to the very detail of these men from this town in the northern parts of Israel, clearly ideologically they are one and the same. And clearly the leader of this group is in cahoots with Iran. Iran would want nothing more than to cause another intifada that mobilizes the Arab world, the Muslim world, behind their banner, behind the Iranian regime banner. And that is something that the Bible does definitely talk about taking place. Now, to see more of the details and the backstory of this, please request our book, Jerusalem in Prophecy. It goes into detail here that will really help you see how much Iran has already invested in its desires to take over Jerusalem. And it shows how this Temple Mount impasse can lead to or will lead to some stunning biblical prophecies. That brings us to the end of another episode of Watch Jerusalem. If you'd like to send us some feedback, you can do that by email, sending us emails to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il or writing snail mail to P.O. Box 8314 Jerusalem, Israel 9018201. Don't forget to stop by Watch Jerusalem this week for the latest analysis pieces involving both biblical prophecy and archaeology, and you can read up on what's taking place on the Temple Mount as well. I'm Brent Nachtigall, and you've been listening to Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive.